Shalom Aleichem. For Parsha Shlach, we have six Divrei Torah. Just a quick overview of the Parsha. Most prominently in this Parsha, we have Moshe Rabbeinu sending the spies, the 12 Meraglim, into the land of Canaan to see the land, to scout out what the approach will be of Klal Yisrael in order to conquer the land. And in fact, Moshe had concerns of sending these Meraglim, even though they were the greatest Nesim, the greatest people of character in that generation, leading each of the Shvatim. Nonetheless, Moshe did have his concerns, and he davens for Yehoshua that he should not get sucked into any negativity by the Meraglim. And in fact, that's what happened. They scout out the land, and they come back. 10 out of 12 of the spies have a negative report. Kalev ben Yefuna tries to stand up and say everything will work out, have faith, but he is shouted down by the Meraglim and Klal Yisrael. And unfortunately, things get worse and hysteria breaks out. Moshe Rabbeinu davens for Bnei Yisrael. He turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't destroy them. And in place of destroying them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did relent, but the decree of 40 years staying in the desert, 1 year for each day that the Meraglim were in the land of Israel, and that generation would be dying out. In the land of the Parsha, we have a number of important issues. For example, we have the mitzvah of challah, being mafrish challah when somebody has a dough. Various issues as it relates to Avodah Zarah, idolatry. We have the unfortunate story of the Mekoshesh Eitzin, the person who was Mechal al Shabbos. And also we have the paragraph that we add on, the third paragraph, the Kriya Shema, relating to tzitzis. We are going to start now with Dvar Torah number one. All the way at the beginning of the Parsha, it's Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Aleph, Shlach Lecha, Anashim, send for you Anashim, send out the Meraglim. And it's a famous Rashi that says, why do we have the discussion of the Meraglim here right after, at the end of last week's Parsha, Parsha's Bahaloscha, we have Miriam speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu and the punishment that she received, Tzoras. And Rashi explains as follows, so why do we have these two parshiyos next to each other? And he says these Meraglim, they were in fact Rishoyim because they did not learn Musar. Here we have it right after the occurrence of Miriam speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu. We see how bad it is to speak Lashon Hara. Here they go and they speak Lashon Hara about the land of Israel. And they didn't learn and they should have learned. And the question is as follows, how should they have learned from Miriam speaking Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu is a person. He has sensitivities. He has emotions and feelings. And it's a terrible thing to speak Lashon Hara about an individual, a person. We have to care about how it's going to be received. It's going to be difficult. It's unpleasant to have people speaking Lashon Hara about. It's a terrible thing. How would you learn from that? Speaking about the land of Israel, the land of Canaan, but it's land. It's land. The land can't hear, doesn't have these sensitivities, obviously don't speak Lashon Hara because of the Kedusha, but there's no Kal Vachomer. It's very difficult to extrapolate speaking Lashon Hara about a person, which apparently would be much worse, that how would they learn from that to not speaking about the land of Canaan? So the Gaon Ma'ashtrovtsa says as follows, indeed, they could have learned, because who is Moshe Rabbeinu? Parshas Bahaloscha tells us the character trait of Moshe Rabbeinu most prominent was Ha'ish Moshe Anav Me'od Mikol Ha'adam Asher Al-Panei Adama. Moshe Rabbeinu was personified by anivus, by humility. And what does humility mean? Moshe Rabbeinu viewed himself exactly as that. I am like a piece of wood. I am like stones of the ground. I'm like dirt. And in other words, what that means is if somebody talked negatively about him, spoke Lashon Hara about him, it didn't impact him whatsoever. He was like an inanimate object. That was Moshe Rabbeinu. You speak negatively about me, didn't have any impact. He didn't have sensitivity to that. It just brushed right off of him, bounced right off of him, didn't have any impact on him. And accordingly, we can learn this Kal Vachomer, just like Miriam spoke Lashon Hara about Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe was not a recipient of it. He didn't care. It just bounced right off of him, just like he was a stone, just like he was the ground. We can learn certainly that it would apply also, don't talk about the land of Israel. That's just like Moshe Rabbeinu. It's going to rub right off of it, but nonetheless, don't speak Lashon Hara. Don't speak Lashon Hara. Even when it may be mutter, we have this concept. It's not mutter. Don't talk about somebody even if they don't care. Don't speak about the land of Israel. Lashon Hara applies. But even speaking about people, if they're, for example, speaking about somebody who's non-Jewish, don't speak Lashon Hara. We shouldn't be Lashon Hara because for ourselves, we can't get used to speaking Lashon Hara. So even if there would be a heter, don't speak anyway. Certainly when there's not a heter, don't speak. And even if it's about Moshe Rabbeinu, certainly don't speak about Moshe Rabbeinu. But does it impact him? Talking about somebody that doesn't have any impact, just like speaking about the land, the Meraglim should have learned from speaking about, Miriam speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu, just like he didn't care whatsoever. The land didn't know, it didn't have sensitivities. Learn. Don't speak Lashon Hara. But unfortunately, that's why we have these Smichos Parshios, Rashi is telling us, that they didn't learn that message, which should have been a very obvious message. We are now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 2. We are in Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Tet Zayin, before the Meraglim embark. It says as follows, that Moshe Rabbeinu Vayikra Moshe Lohoshea Binun Yoshua. Moshe changed the name of Hoshea to Yehoshua. He adds the yud in front, and Rashi explains his balalalav. This is a tefillah. Moshe Rabbeinu was davening for Yeshua. He changed his name. It would be much more effective davening. What does Yehoshua stand for? Ka Yoshiacha, that a Kadosh Baruch Hu should save you. This is the tefillah, the davening, the prayer that Moshe Rabbeinu said on behalf of Yeshua, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should save you from the Eitzah of the Meraglim, from the plans, the nefarious plans of the Meraglim. And the Amor Migur says as follows, when it comes to somebody who's an Anav, and we just talked about the Anivus of Moshe Rabbeinu, Yeshua had the same personality trait of Anivus. He was an Anav. And that means that this is a person that doesn't want to stick up for, make his own demands, doesn't want to be insistent about things, even when it's the right thing. Somebody who's an Anav is going to be okay. People have other views, they have other demands. I'm not going to try to convince them. They can have their views, I'll have my view, I don't want to make waves, etc. And in fact, Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned. He was concerned about Yeshua because Yeshua was an Anav. And when you're with other great people, these were 12 of the greatest people of Klal Yisrael. They were the leaders of the Shvatim. They were the leaders of the generations. If we have 10 of them that are going to come out and give their opinions, Yehoshua being such an Anav, Moshe Rabbeinu was concerned. He's going to go along with them. He's not going to want to stick up. That's not his personality. And accordingly, Moshe Rabbeinu davened, I don't have faith in the 10 of the 12, and I'm concerned Yehoshua is going to go along with them because he has this personality trait of not wanting to make waves. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Moshe Rabbeinu, please save Yehoshua, that he doesn't go along with them. And in fact, the Admor from Gur learned something very important. He says, as important as the personality trait of Anivus and not making waves is, but there are indeed times that we have to put our foot down and we have to say, when something is wrong, this is wrong. And that is the message of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe, being the greatest Anav, also doesn't want to make waves. Yeshua, his Talmid, doesn't want to make waves. But despite that personality trait, we have to know. And says Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to know. And this is davening for Yeshua. Yeshua, I pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that in this situation, this is not something to go along with, and you have to put your foot down. A very important last message, and Admor Migur says we should just have siyata dishmaya to know when we should be quiet and not make waves, and when is the time that we really have to put our feet down and say, this is inappropriate, this needs to stop. We are now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 3. This is more of a technical point. When we get to Perek Yud Gimel, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, it says about the Meraglim that they're going through the land of Canaan, and they get to a place called Nachal Eshkol, Vayavo Ad Nachal Eshkol. And then in the next paragraph, in the next Pasuk Chaf Dalet, it says, Lamakomahu Kara Nachal Eshkol. In this place, they called the Nachal of Eshkol. What were they naming it after? Neshkol? Because it's named after an Eshkol is a cluster of grapes, and they took the cluster of grapes from there to Klal Yisrael. So the Gra asks the following question. You're naming it now in Pasuk Chaf Dalet because they're taking the cluster of grapes there, but it just said in the prior pasuk that they got to Nachal Eshkol. Apparently, it was already named Nachal Eshkol. So which is it? So if you look carefully, it says when they vayavo al Nachal Eshkol and pasuk Yogimel that they got there, they arrived in Nachal Eshkol. Eshkol is spelled differently. It is spelled without a vav. And in pasuk Chavdal that they named it Eshkol, after having the cluster of grapes, it is spelled with a vav. What's the difference? So the Gra brilliantly says as follows. Apparently it was named already by the time they got there. It was called Nachal Eshkol. Eshkol would be the name of a person, named after a person named Eshkol. But the spelling was without a vav, Aleph Shein Chaf Lamed. That represents Eshkol single tense because it's named after an individual. And then while they were there, they took that cluster of grapes and they renamed it. It's the same name. It may sound the same, but they added a vav and now it represents plural tense, Eshkol with a vav, that's Lashon Rabim, representing that it has two reasons to be named. Number one, the original name, it was named after the person Eshkol. And now we're effectively renaming it for the second reason, because we are calling it after the Eshkol. Eshkol Ha'anavim, after the cluster of grapes, and accordingly, that's why it's spelled with a vav the second time, Lashon Rabim, because it's named not only after the original individual that Nachal Eshkol was named after, but also because it's named for the second reason, the Eshkol of the grapes that they took from there. We are now moving forward. Klal Yisrael gets back, the Meraglim get back to Klal Yisrael after their 40-day travel. Unfortunately, things are not good. A negative report, an evil report by 10 of the 12. And now Kalev stands up and he tries to silence things. He tries to get control. Things will work out. We will be successful into coming into the land of Israel. And it says as follows. This is Dvar Torah number 4. We're in Kerek Yud Gimel Pasuk Lamed. Vayahas Kalev es Am. Kalev here, he silences the Am El Moshe, towards Moshe. What does El Moshe mean? We're not going to have to see what that means. It doesn't seem to fit. Why didn't it just say Vayahas Kalev el Am? Es Am, that Kalev tried to silence the Am. Towards Moshe, what does that mean? Vayomer alena ale, will be successful. V'yarashnu asam, we will come and we will inherit the land of Israel. So what is going on here? A little bit background. Back to Parshas Baaloscha. Why was Klal Yisrael so on edge, so nervous about going into the land of Israel? We won't be successful. If we remember back in Baaloscha, there was a nevuah by Eldad Umeidad. Eldad and Medad, they were nevim, and their nevuah, the prophecy that they had was as follows. Moshe meis Yoshua Machnis. Moshe Rabbeinu is going to die, he's going to pass away, and it's going to be Yoshua who is going to take us into the land of Israel. And everyone knew that Yeshua was a great person, but he was not Moshe Rabbeinu. And now they're basically panicked. How are we going to be successful to come into the land, to fight the giants there, fortified cities? We're not going to be able to overcome them. With Moshe Rabbeinu, we had a fighting chance. Moshe Rabbeinu will be successful, but without Moshe Rabbeinu, we will not be successful. That's what's the background here of why Klal Yisrael is so on edge. And we have these Meraglim coming back and saying the strength of the people in the land, and it's fortified cities, and people die there, and it's terrible. We're not going to be successful. Our military is nothing compared to these people. And Klal Yisrael is thinking, we have that to deal with, and without Moshe Rabbeinu, that's not going to happen. And Kalev now stands up. And Kalev says, you're making a very significant mistake. You are thinking that all of the great miracles that HaKadosh Baruch sent us is because of Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe is the person to save us, the individual Moshe, he is our savior. You don't have it right. The reason that Moshe Rabbeinu is such a great leader is because of Klal Yisrael. The power of Moshe Rabbeinu emanates from Klal Yisrael. It's because of the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. And that's independent of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Kedusha of Klal Yisrael will stay, and the miracles will stay regardless of Moshe Rabbeinu. So you have it in reverse. You think Moshe Rabbeinu is the leader, and he's the one to lead us and to save us, but he's a great person, no question. But the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael is what brings the miracles. And if it's a different leader, we still have the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael, and the miracles will come via that leader. That is what Kalev says is your fundamental mistake. And accordingly, we understand the psukim as follows. We have the Temeraglim say negative things about the land. We won't be successful. The Yahas Kalev es Am El Moshe. Here we have Kalev silencing the Am about Moshe Rabbeinu. He's correcting their mistake. He's saying, you think it's all dependent on Moshe Rabbeinu. El Moshe, silence them about Moshe. We will be successful. Vayomer ale na'ale. The Yerashno said, ki yachon nuchala. We will be successful even without Moshe Rabbeinu. We will be successful because we have the Kedusha of Klal Yisrael. And that's going to answer a question, a critical question. Why do we have Kalev doing all the speaking, and Yeshua is not involved here? Why don't we have Kalev and Yeshua being involved here? telling Klal Yisrael, you're making a fundamental mistake. It's not all about Moshe Rabbeinu will be successful. And accordingly, says the Mashmesh HaChachma beautifully, it's Pashut. How could Yeshua get up and say, don't worry, we'll be successful. It's not all about Moshe Rabbeinu. If Yeshua is the one who's taking over, Klal Yisrael would totally discount that, saying, Yeshua, you're just saying this out of self-interest. You're saying we'll be okay without Moshe Rabbeinu because you're the leader. It's in your self-interest to say that. Accordingly, Yeshua cannot say that. He cannot be silencing, saying, don't worry, we'll be okay. I'll lead you. That would sound terrible. Accordingly, it had to be the third party of Caliph. The third party of Kalev, who they wouldn't discount, they did in the end of the day, but not because they thought he had bias towards Yeshua, because he would be the leader. Yeshua would be the leader. He couldn't be saying such a thing. Kalev was the proper person, and this explained why it had to be Kalev silencing Klal Yisrael El Moshe about Moshe Rabbeinu, the misinformation they had about Moshe Rabbeinu, but it could not be Yehoshua. We are now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 5, and we are in Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Hey, Pasuk Vav, and it says now things got terrible, hysteria throughout Klal Yisrael, and now classic Moshe and Aaron, we need to daven, we need to save Klal Yisrael from the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it says as follows, Vayipol Moshe, Aaron, Aklanim, they fell on their faces, and Yehoshua, Binun, and Kaleb, Ben Yefuna, they have a different reaction. It's very fascinating. Moshe and Aaron, on the one hand, davening. They fell on their faces like they're doing tachnun. Yeshua ben Nun and Kaleb ben Yefuna, it says they were of the people who spied out the land. They tore their clothing. That was what they did, their reaction, tearing their clothing. So we have the following question right here. We have the two reactions. We have the reaction of Moshe and Aaron davening, Yeshua and Kalev on the other hand. They are ripping their clothing. Why does it say here in the Pasuk, Min Hatarim El Esaaretz? We already know who Yeshua ben Nun and Kaleb ben Yefuna. We know who Yeshua and Kaleb are. We know they're the one and spied out the land. Why does it have to say specifically here to remind us that they were of the spies who went into the land of Israel? That is our fundamental question. So accordingly, we see here the two reactions. Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron, they fall on their faces like they're davening. Nefilas Apayim, that we do, we say Tachnun, but we don't fall on the ground. They fell on the ground. Why are they doing this? Because they were of the view that there's still hope. We need to daven. We need to daven to Kadosh Baruch Hu that he will take away the terrible gzeira against Klal Yisrael, the terrible punishment against Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved, don't punish them. Let us go right into the land. No 40 years, no dying in the Midbar. But Yeshua and Kalev, their reaction was tearing their clothing. What does that represent? Avelus. Avelus is mourning because they knew once the decree was made, it was signed and sealed, and tefillah is not going to help. The decree has already been made. And that leads to the following question, because they were right. Kalev and Yeshua are the ones who were right. They knew that there was no going back on the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how is it possible, ask the Imre Shefer, that on the one hand Moshe and Aaron were on a greater level than Yeshua and Kalev, but here Yeshua and Kalev were the right ones. They knew what was going on. They had such more of an insight into the situation. Moshe and Aaron, they had incorrectly surmised that they would be able to daven. They had hope, but there was no hope in this situation. The decree was signed and sealed. How are Yeshua and Kalev correct? And Moshe and Aaron were incorrect. And accordingly, it's that language that said, you have to remember, Yeshua and Kalev, who were they? Min Hatarim Esaretz. They were of the spies that went into the land. Somebody who goes into the land of Israel, he is impacted by the land in a very positive way, and it increases the greatness and the chokmah and the kedusha of that individual. In fact, there's a Gemara in Ksubas that says that when one of us from Bavel, talking about those who were living in Bavel, would go up to Eretz Yisrael, it's as if he's two of who he was previously. Meaning, in other words, when you get to the land of Israel, it impacts you in such a positive way, it gives you chachman seichel, twice the amount of you of what you had you stayed in Bavel. And accordingly, the same thing applies here. It's explaining that Kalev and Yeshua, although correct, they're on a lower level than Moshe and Aaron, but they were of those who went into the land. And going into the land raises their greatness and their insight and their understanding. And that's why they were correct that the decree is signed and sealed, and that's why they had their reaction of tearing the clothing of Avelus, because they knew there was nothing to be done. We are now moving forward to Dvar Torah number 6. We are fast-forwarding towards the end of the Parsha, Perek Tesvav, Psukim Yudzayin, Yudches, talking about the mitzvah of challah. When you have bread, when you have a dough, when you have a batter, and you're going to bake it, take off challah. The challah is given to the Kohanim. And that's what it says in the Pasuk, Bevoachem al Aretz, when you come to the land of Israel, Asherani Beveyaschem Shama, that I bring you there. And when you're about to eat of the bread of the land, which is a very mundane thing, it says, take off the truma, truma la Hashem. Give it to the truma la Hashem, it's giving to the Kohanim, the representatives of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. And the Rebbe Reb Zusha says as follows, a major important yesod here, we were created with base needs. We were created with having the needs of eating and drinking. And accordingly, he says something very powerful. We should not think that these are only material needs, but we have to know that if we are given them by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, there has to be a reason for it. And he says that anytime you're about to eat, you're about to drink, you should think to yourself in advance, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created me in this way, that I need these things for a reason, because a Kodesh Baruch Hu could have created us easily that we don't have the needs of eating and drinking. So what is the reason for this? Obviously, we have to eat and drink now that we created this way in order to fulfill our needs, our material, our physical needs. But we have to know that a Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us this need for a reason, that we should be elevating these physical needs to be something of Kedush and Tara, something of holiness. It can't simply be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us needing food and drink just to fill our bodies. It has to have something to do with our soul as well. And accordingly, the Rebbe, Reb Zusha, reads the Psukim as follows, Bivoachem el Haaretz, when you come to the land of Israel and you need to be involved with the land itself, you need to be involved with the food and the growing and the agriculture of the land, and you need to have this, you have these physical needs, Zachor Tizkru, you have to remember, why did I bring you there? I am bringing you there with the intention that you should, and I created you with the intention, you should be hungry, you should have taivas, you should have physical needs, but not because of they in themselves. But you have to remember, when you're coming to eat of the land itself, it's not about our base needs. It's not about that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us simply so we can feed the bodies, but tarimu truma l'Hashem, you should elevate it. You have to elevate these base physical needs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be something of Kedusha and Tahara. Elevate the mundane that applies in so many ways in our lives. And accordingly, not only ruminating before eating that we should think about why we have to have food and drink, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us and wants to elevate ourselves, elevate this world. That's why we say a bracha. That's why we say a bracha before. That's why we say a bracha afterward in order to elevate the eating. And then that's why there are additional halachas. Eat at a table. Don't eat walking in the shuk. Don't eat walking out in public. Sit like a mensch. All of these halachas are to incorporate and inculcate us, or one of the reasons is because we should view it as eating is something not is simply feeding our bodies, that does as well, but is something of Kedusha and Tahara. That's why we view our tables as the Mizbeach nowadays. We don't have the Mizbeach, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. That's our table, and indeed we should think of it, not only go through the motions of eating, but also the emotions of eating as well. Thanks so much for listening. Have a wonderful day.